deep in London's beating heart lies a wall. How lucky do it be if you know the call? For if the wall steps aside, be not afraid of what you see, 'cause the wizard world is opened up, as has the Griffin.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Shriekcast. This is a Harry Potter reread podcast for lapsed fans. Sometimes I say it's the Shriekcast, sometimes I say it's the Shrieking Jack. It's whatever you want it to be. I am your host, ZC.
And I'm Liz.
And Liz, how are you coping with the Dumbledore discourse hitting the mainstream?
I've been on a little bit of a roller coaster, because at first, as always, when J.K. Rowling news or Harry Potter news kind of hits the mainstream, I'm like, wow, this is serendipity for our podcast. This is amazing. But kind of as it went on, the backlash started popping up, and I'm over it now. I'm like, this is so passé. I've had enough. So I've kind of gone through some phases with this.
Yeah, I'm with you, especially because I hate to say this, and I hope that this isn't trotting on any of our listeners' toes. I'm just going to say that I think about 99% of the tweets that are in the format of, like, me, nothing, J.K. Rowling, something stupid, most of them suck ass, unfortunately.
I agree with that. I will say that I have a lot of faith in our listeners, so I'm certain, I just know that that's just the common folk.
Yeah,
it pops up in the news and they gotta just like pull the trigger on a tweet, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I've just been seeing too many of those, and I'm just saying, like, look, I'm with you. I love to make fun of J.K. Rowling, but step into the fold, contribute to our Patreon, and let us show you how it's really done, right?
Yeah, I'm just saying that I think that our listeners, our audience, is an audience of Harry Potter scholars. So I put a lot of faith in their Hurtwood jokes House, and their tweets, for sure.
Yeah, Hurtwood House is a lot more powerful. They're cut above, I would say. But it is interesting to see this happen, right? Like it is insanely funny to me that J.K. Rowling, like, clearly left Twitter to stop dealing with people yelling at her.
Mm-hmm.
And then this happened, right? Like this is not, probably not the ideal response to taking a social media break. And it is funny to me seeing all this stuff popping up, because it feels like everyone arguing about it is having a different conversation.
For sure.
It is very silly. So though, if you are somehow unaware of what's going on, the Blu-ray, physical Blu-ray of Crimes of Grindelwald finally came out. It had previously hit digital. That was where I'd like seen all the deleted scenes and stuff. But I guess the Blu-ray version came with even more stuff, like mm-hmm. features and like more commentaries. And on one of them called, what was it, Distinctly Dumbledore, mm-hmm. or something like that, a very chintzy little featurette about their design and writing of Dumbledore, she said that they had an intense relationship, and she drops the bomb. It's not really a bomb, honestly, but she explicitly makes it explicit that there is a sexual dimension to the relationship. That is the actual quote. And it's weird, because this isn't new information. It's just really stupid, right?
Yeah. I have to point out two heroes that are out in the world today. And mm-hmm. one of them is people that upload lyric videos to YouTube. Every person that does that, you know, braver than the troops. The second I would like to recognize in this moment are people that upload special features from the Crimes of Grindelwald Blu-ray
yes.
onto YouTube.
Thank you.
Because we did watch the Distinctly Dumbledore, you know, little featurette there. And I guess I say that to head off the J.K. Rowling defenders logged on and think that people are only looking at the headline and not really reading what it is in context. And I do like kind of agree to a certain point, like, this isn't all that crazy, right? We have no real new information. And it isn't really like outside, like it's not too crazy, right? But it still is just kind of stupid, I guess.
Right. The thing about it is frustrating is that one, it is continuing to show her double down and sort of like take credit for representation, right? Like she's doubling down on like, oh, this, it's very clear that there's this relationship between them, even though the movie never even comes close to suggesting that they were lovers, right? Like you could, if you go in with that information, like you can pick it, you can like pick out details, but if you are just like normal person, has no awareness of Harry Potter, goes to see this movie, would not even cross your mind. But the other thing too that I think is so strange about this is it's odd to me that when we already have this information that like Dumbledore was gay, right? Like that's information that's been floating around for like a decade now.
Right.
And like that sort of comes part and part, like that is his sexuality, right? So like we don't need that extra information. The thing that makes this so strange is that in like further than just saying like, oh, they had a sexual relationship in this little featurette thing, she goes on this tangent about how like the sexual dynamic is different from the emotional dynamic, and it is odd to me that you would single out the one gay character to get explicit about the sex life of, right? Especially when they also, like, the characters involved are Wizard Hitler, right? Like this is a real, like tragic gaze thing here that's just shows me that she really has no idea what she's doing with this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I felt like at least as she kind of elaborated on saying that there was a sexual dimension to their relationship, a lot of what she said seemed to be there to head off criticism that is like assumed, sort of, because she goes on this tangent about like, oh, well, label doesn't matter, gay, straight, or whatever, like
that's
like
exactly it's really the
emotions behind it, and it's just it does feel like it is heading off a criticism out of nowhere. And I think a lot of people that really kind of feel like they need to defend this, I would like to reiterate, as you said, one of the people involved in the one gay relationship in all of Harry Potter is a one-to-one Hitler metaphor.
And,
right?
And, like, and, yeah. And also we are getting the explicit details of their like physical relationship too, which just doesn't like at no point in Harry Potter history has she gone like, well, Ginny is actually a top, like you know, like we're not getting those kind of details, right? Like it's just assumed that like, oh, all these characters went off and had kids, and it's not really material to the story. But with Dumbledore, who is gay and loves Wizard Hitler, it's like, oh, it's so sad, they had such a passionate sexual relationship, and oh, and they were just sucking and fucking each other all the time until he decided to do a genocide. And it's like, come on, like why is this the focus for these two characters, right? Yeah, like it's very leering to me. And
it continues into her I mean everyone that she isn't, like, they're not normal, right? And it is very other, her language is very othering. She clearly has not educated herself in anything, because like it's true, like Molly and Arthur, they probably have a sexual dimension to their relationship, right? And we don't have to hear about it because they're married and have a bunch
that's
of
not,
kids.
That's not what the story is about, and like it never has been. It's a kid's book, right? Now all of a sudden it's something that like matters, but it's only to these characters. It just feels so out of place, and like you say, like just kind of tone deaf and othering, and it ain't good. And the funniest part of all this is, like, you know, I was saying that, like, the weird thing about all this is how it has felt like everyone's having different conversations about this. Mm-hmm. I love that the main sticking point of all of the, like, defenses on this, of this online are, anyone who is upset about this is actually homophobic.
Oh, yeah. There's, like, a big, like, oh, so you think gay sex is gross?
It's like, no, like, what are you talking about? It's such a, you know, no one is saying like, ew, don't they, ew, they made Dumbledore gay. It's like, wait, why?
I mean, I'm sure someone is, right? Like, right. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you can. I mean, there is kind of another streak of the mainstream response, which is like, J.K. Rowling just can't stop giving too much information. And I think that's just not quite it. Like, I think that that's like an easy one. That's an easy dunk. I mean, that's the classic joke, right? Like, you know, the J.K. Rowling is like, oh, the Sorting Hat is into bondage or whatever. And that's easy. But I don't think it really gets to kind of the heart of the issue here, which is that kind of her being reactionary to criticism of people saying like, no, the Dumbledore thing isn't good representation. And she, her response being like a defensive, like, yeah, they fucked. What do you want?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's honestly not the amount of information we're getting. Like, I don't know about you, but I like hearing creators talk about like little details of their stories, right? Like, that's cool. I enjoy that. That's not really what we get out of J.K. Rowling. Like, we get fabricated stories about how things, you know, that she clearly pulled out of her ass were planned all along. And we get these very weird, like, as you say, like, really defensive, like positions on, it's the information she chooses to give has mostly been about, like, characters what they earn her, what credibility they earn her as like a inclusive author, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this was the deal with like the Hermione stuff when the Cursed Child and casting was announced. It's fucking awesome that they cast a black woman as Hermione. The problem is that the response to people questioning that was her going like, you know, I never did say she was white. And it's like, okay, like, come on now. Like, it never feels like she's genuinely just like giving real pieces of information about her story. It feels like she is like using it strategically to like improve her social cachet. And that's really weird to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I Dumbledore, I mean, that is what it, like, the Hermione stuff is another example of like, yeah, she didn't come out and say like, oh yeah, Hermione is white. The problem is that she others everyone that isn't cis, white, straight, right?
Right, yes. As we have pointed out in our readings, every time a black character is introduced, it like comments on the color of their skin and like what hairstyle they have. Like we get that immediately in ways that we do not get about the main trio, right? Like that is just not, She does not write about characters outside of, you know, her like central perspective holistically. And this Dumbledore stuff just really, really hammers that home, is that like Grindelwald and Dumbledore's sexuality is a curiosity. Like, it's a lurid thing that she keeps bringing up, and oh, it's so tragic that they had this sexual relationship that was torn apart by ideology or whatever. It's like, okay, why are you focusing so hard on this? Like you just write a story about them being lovers. Like, we don't need these like gory details of it in a ostensibly a children's story, right?
I'm not really even sure who Fantastic Beasts is for, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, there's a lot of baby death and sexual violence in that movie, so maybe it's not for kids anymore. It's just weird, right? Like, it feels so transparent to me what she's doing, but like, and maybe this is what makes like the mainstream discourse so frustrating, is that like everyone is just picking on like, well, do you think it's bad for Dumbledore to be gay? No. Like, do you think it's bad for stories to have representation? No. I mean, there's the other thing too, which is the worst reaction to this, which is the people, and this is like the majority of like the popular posts on the subreddit. And like, I know we're always picking on the subreddit, but because there are no Harry Potter forums or anything anymore, it really is just like the one thermometer I have of the fandom, right? People going like, you know, that's what's so terrible about the people, you know, these SJWs crying for representation, is when they get it, they don't want it. Like,
oh, like, yeah.
Like, what do you want? Like, you know, you keep whining about it, and then when the author finally gives it to you, you have problems with it. And it's like,
Yeah, I have to, it's hard because like the Reddit is our snapshot. I will say that like that sort of thing is kind of a Reddit special a little bit. Like that is definitely a community that skews toward those sorts of gotcha moments. So yeah, this has been a lot. It's been weird seeing it's so big. And also just because it's not really new information. I know that there was like a popular theory that that Dumbledore was in love with Grindelwald and Grindelwald didn't return his affections or something and was just like using him. So there's been some amount of like fandom reaction to that being not true, but it has been, I think this just continues to be J.K. Rowling instead of learning things or kind of becoming better moving forward. She is instead trying to like retrofit wokeness onto her previous works, and it is truly baffling to me.
Yeah, it's very strange stuff, and she's just gonna keep doing it too. Like, I'm actually very curious now what, like, when she finally does return in like to the public in some form or another, like, what is the response to this going to be? Because she's always been very combative, you know, with fans and stuff on Twitter. That's where a lot of this information comes from, right? Like, you know, the I never said Hermione was white thing was, I think, a quote tweet that she did, right? Of someone asking her about it. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, when she does return or when she, you know, gives a talk or a presentation or whatever, whether we still get information out of her in like this sort of defensive fashion, or like, I wonder if this is like the tipping point and it's going to be like, well, fuck this. I'm never going to, cause like, I, you know, we joke about her a lot on here, but I honestly don't, like I said, I don't mind authors continuing to like write about their story, you know, write about their worlds, right? That's not the problem. I just wish she would do it in a way that like wasn't so clearly, it's difficult. I don't even want to say like self-serving. Like, there's a version of this where she is, you know, like very clearly going back and saying like, yeah, I could have done it, you know, or like, not even I could have done a better job, but more like, yeah, I wrote Harry Potter in the 90s and I had a very specific worldview, and now I want to change some things to be more inclusive. Like, you can be open about that kind of thing for sure, but there's a way to do it, and it's not like this.
Yeah, she sure talks about it like it's real.
It's, yeah, right, like it's real.
I harp on the fandom a lot for this, in that they all, like, conversations about Harry Potter seem to inevitably only, like, the only mode seems to be like, okay, let's talk about Snape and his actions and whether they were good or bad, but as if he were a real person that did these real things. Like, right, like we're going to talk
like
about
Snape,
the battle
you're
of
bad.
Right, we're going to talk about the Battle of Hogwarts as a real historical event. J.K. Rowling seems to also do that.
It's a learned behavior.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's kind of the snake eating its own tail sort of situation, but it's very weird.
Speaking of snakes, she does say apparently in the commentary, these movies have given me the chance to tell a story I knew all along about Nagini, who appears only as a snake in Harry Potter. She reveals in a film extra called Credence Nagini and the Circus Arcanus, available on the Crimes of Grindelwald Blu-ray. Now, there's always hints that she has been human, Rowling says, in her name, because the Naga are, in mythology, a race of snake beings. So the name was an allusion to the fact that she may have been one, she may have herself once been human. Hey, J.K. Rowling, you've always given people animal names, right? And it's never worked the other way around. Like, right? Like, Professor Lupin is a werewolf. That one, you know, sure, I'll grant you that one. But when I see a snake called Nagini, I don't go like, ah, like a Naga. I say like, oh, that's a snake-related thing, right? Like,
yeah, well, also, the snakes also speak in Harry Potter. They have, I mean, I guess I can't say human language, right? But they have human intelligence,
right, they are
and
sapient.
Sentience. So I think that was probably like enough for me to be like, that makes sense. But yeah, it doesn't work any other way. Also, I would hope that in the time, like, assuming this is true, assuming Nagini was a human woman this entire time, by the time we got to this year, 2019, or I guess 2018, when Crimes of Grindelwald came out, I would have hoped that she would maybe rethink kind of that.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of that deleted scene where Credence and Nagini share a stolen crust of bread, Aladdin style, in an alley.
Yeah.
She's wearing the story her, like... I always wanted to tell.
Yeah, God. Speaking of the story she's always wanted to tell, I think we should move around to the story that she has already told.
Order of the Phoenix.
Order of the Phoenix. You got a hand to me. That was a pretty slick one.
It was pretty good. Let's jump into it. The first chapter we read is called The Ministry of Magic, and that's chapter 7. It is the next morning. Harry had gone to sleep in the last chapter, the night before his hearing. So he wakes up, and we get, you know, a snapshot of his nervousness. He kind of tries to stay in bed, but finally gets up. And he has a quick breakfast of toast because he just can't eat anymore. And he's there in the kitchen with Arthur, Molly, Tonks, Lupin, and Sirius, I think. And that's mostly, he kind of finds out how he's going to be getting to the ministry. Again, he and Arthur are going to take Muggle transportation instead of Arthur apparating. But he's on edge. He's very worried. He's thinking about, you know, that time tonight he might be expelled and not be able to be a wizard anymore. But he does hear, you know, they're kind of trying to talk him up, and he finds out that his trial is being overseen by Amelia Bones. I think that's the first time we see her name, and they give her credit for being fair. And so that if he just tells the truth, he says what happens, then he'll be fine. The law is on his side. Harry helps Arthur take and navigate the Muggle subway to the entrance to the ministry, which is a phone booth, and they go through kind of like a security checkpoint where Harry gets like a guest badge, and they kind of state why they're there and all of that. And it goes underground, and we kind of see the Ministry of Magic for the first time. And Harry is a little bit in awe, looking around, lots of magical happenings. He does see the fountain for the first time. Which he observes has a witch and wizard at the center of it, and also a centaur, a house elf, and a goblin. And they're like underneath the witch and wizard, kind of looking up at them in awe, admiring them. And we basically kind of just get like a whirlwind tour of the ministry as Arthur rushes Harry up to where he thinks the hearing is. We kind of get... a bunch of like department names and things that are there. Some of the ones that I'll just mention, like there's kind of like a quick joke about like a chicken that's breathing fire. And they say like, oh, that's something to do with like the experimental breeding department. Like they did something illegal. There's like a Gobstones club there. There's a Ludicrous Patents office. So a lot of them is just kind of like little cute jokes. We do run into Kingsley, who's there, and Harry almost says hi to him, but Arthur kind of stops him because they're not supposed to know each other. Arthur and Kingsley have kind of a staged conversation where Arthur and Kingsley are kind of putting the ministry and the Aurors off the track of Sirius Black. And this is kind of like a cute scene where they have a separate conversation quietly about like Kingsley coming over that night for like meatballs at headquarters, while out loud they're having this conversation that is like tense, and they're supposed to not really know each other very well. There's also, as they're kind of walking by, we hear about Muggle pranks. I feel like this is maybe the second time we've heard about this. I think we heard about it in like the first or the second book. And Arthur says that it won't be a job for the Aurors. It'll be a job for the Magical Law Enforcement Patrol. Once they get to Arthur's office, they find out that Harry's trial has been moved. It is way, way downstairs in a different courtroom, and it's been moved up an hour, and he would have completely missed it if he wasn't so early. So Arthur rushes him to the elevator. They run to try to make it on time. They're still going to be late about 10 minutes. As they're going down in the elevator, we do hear a few other names of ministry departments, but the one I will mention that is name dropped for the first time is the Department of Mysteries. Harry does get to the door of the of where the hearing will be, and Arthur says, "You know, I can't come with you. Good luck," and pushes him in the door, and that's the end of the chapter.
This is such a weird reading. This to me, and I'm curious if you feel similarly. The first half of this chapter gave me such good, like, Sorcerer's Stone vibes, in that it gets back to the stuff I really love about the Harry Potter world, in that it has Harry being amazed at something Arthur finds mundane, but then on the way there, Arthur finds all the things that Harry is finding mundane fascinating, because they're taking the train and they're like they're on the underground and stuff. I loved that. And I had a very strong reaction to that. I was just like, oh yeah, I love the dichotomy between the magic and muggle worlds in this story, like on paper at least, right?
Yeah, this scene really, really mirrored the scene where Hagrid I could not remember Harry's name for the life of me. I was like, what is that little boy wizard's name? how long have I been doing this?
Episode 55.
Okay, yeah. Harry, our main character, and Hagrid kind of taking the muggle transportation, and Harry helping him with the muggle money and stuff, and then them going to Diagon Alley. This is almost like a direct mirror of that, but with Arthur Weasley and kind of Harry is older and knows more about magic, but is still kind of wowed by the ministry, but is much more like with it, and that also means that he's like noticing stuff more.
Yeah, Harry notices politics in this. Is this the first time?
Is this the first time he noticed politics?
Yeah,
where were you when Harry first noticed politics?
I just say that because I actually remembered as I was reading this that like. I remember the detail about there being this weird statue in the Ministry of Magic, and I could not remember if the book acknowledged how fucked up it was, right? Like, mm-hmm. if it was intentionally written to be this weird, uncomfortable statue, or if it was just something that was in there and was never mentioned again. But hey, credit to Harry and to J.K. Rowling here. I really like this scene where he sees the statue of the wizards and, like, all the subservient fawning beings around him and like notices how weird and uncomfortable that is. Like I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I really do like it in contrast to that, like you said, the Sorcerer's Stone feeling, which is where he is completely just kind of bowled over by everything. Everything is good and perfect. He's left his horrible life with his horrible cartoon relatives and is entering like this fantasy world where everything is good and it's all like amazing broomsticks and candy and magic books and stuff. And this is him, and he's still like seeing all these new things, but he is much more adult now and is noticing politics and thinks like, oh, maybe this place is a little bit more fucked up than I gave it credit for.
I'm just sorry. I'm just imagining like the Sorcerer's Stone, like the Diagon Alley visit for the first time again, but like with politically astute Harry and him walking into Gringotts and going like, oh no, this is super anti-Semitic, dude.
God,
Hagrid, there's Stars of David on the floor. This is really fucked up.
Oh my God. I guess we didn't talk about it in the news that the Gringotts studio tour is going up and everyone has been dunking on J.K. Rowling like all week, and that one kind of flew under the radar being being some yikes. So yeah, that would be very funny to see noticing politics Harry going to Diagon Alley.
Hagrid, why are all of the goblins Jewish stereotypes?
The thing about Diagon Alley is that is the pristine, perfect vision of capitalism, and this is the very muddy government metaphor that I still don't fully understand here.
Yeah. There's some real, I don't know, like all the stuff of him going through the ministry, I really, really enjoyed. I loved like the shitty elevator. I loved they're like, it's so basic, right? But just like the image of like all these people, traveling through fireplaces that are all lined up, like this is the normal mode of transport, and like the fireplace outside of a home, just like as a work like transport tool, is very funny. And like seeing people, magically pop out of thin air, but they have that like Monday morning look on their face and stuff. Like there's just really cute little moments like that. And I like Arthur's office, quote unquote, that he has. Is it like a converted broom closet or something? It's very cute.
Yeah. He doesn't get to have a window or something. Cause that's the other thing, is that they're like magical windows, but he doesn't have one because he is I don't know, they don't like his department, basically.
It just seems like he's in like one of those like vanity departments that's just like not really taken seriously, like he's sort of in like a Parks and Recreation style thing, right? Almost, where he clearly has no budget. He's clearly not respected. He's just like kind of off in a closet somewhere with like a little pet project. It's fun.
I am so fucked up by one detail in this chapter, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you know what it is because I mentioned it in my summary. So here's a question.
Yeah.
Why, when a petty crime happens nearby you, a wizard, do you call the Supreme Court? If there is a magical law enforcement patrol, can you explain that to me?
Yes, I am so confused by this now. And
She wrote the quiz. Why? Okay, so you see a petty crime and you're a snitch, so you call the Supreme Court and they're like, okay, we'll send out the beat cop for you.
What? Okay. The only thing I can think of, this is the biggest stretch I can possibly think of.
Okay.
But this is the only conclusion I could come to.
Okay.
Is that she wrote that like big quiz about the Wizengamot thing, as a like piece of post Voldemort coming back lore to show how authoritarian and scary the wizarding world had gotten. However, I instantly don't believe my own theory here, because if you were going to do that, you would not need to write 350 questions, right?
It like, is such a long quiz. We should really revisit that at some point.
Yeah.
The only problem with it, because I mean, honestly, just reading the questions is very funny, but whenever I think to come back to it, I always forget how bizarre the scoring system works, so that the only way to find out what the correct answer is to look at some person's like conjecture
Google spreadsheet, right? Wasn't it like,
yeah,
there's no,
yeah, like they made a spreadsheet and they were like, this is our best guess, because it just scores you at the end and you get some amount of points for wrong answers, so it's very difficult to reverse engineer the scoring system.
Yeah. But yes, the revelation that there are like low-level beat cops in the Harry Potter universe is just an offhand line, but it really threw a wrench in my like understanding of this world, right? Like,
yeah, and we even talked about this when Aurors were first introduced, I think, by Moody, and saying like, oh, having the Aurors be like dark wizard like headhunters is extremely cool. It's weird that they just became cops later.
Yeah,
but now there's this existence of these other cops, right? Like just normal police officers. So the world building here is amazing.
It also does not help, I don't know if this jumped out to you, but the description of the like Auror office that Harry peeked into just made it sound like a total just like frat club. Like It was, it's like a bunch of cubicles. There's a guy with a ponytail who had his feet up on his desk and was taking a nap or whatever. And there were like sports and band posters all over the place, right? Like, it really doesn't seem like the thing we've gotten about Auror so far is like, Moody is the most badass motherfucker that has ever existed. He stares evil in the face. He shoots all the bad wizards. He's seen the real shit on the front lines. Does he come into the office and is like, I don't know, I'm just gonna play my Switch until something comes up, okay? It's really, I would expect a slightly more regimented and mysterious vibe for the Aurors if they're supposed to be the super badass SWAT team, right?
So are the Aurors like detectives and the magical law enforcement patrol are just like traffic cops and like noise complaint cops?
Like, that's the other thing too. Yeah, that's the other vibe it has too, is it could be like the office in the background of a detective show, right? But then I don't know, like I like detective stories a lot. I don't know if I would ever call detectives badass, right? Like the image we got of Moody was that like he was out there like shooting fools, right? Like he's an action man, and these just sort of seem like dopey cop. It's very strange.
It's a lot. I also kind of want to throw a wrench into this. I know that, you know, we like to look at Harry Potter kind of as it is a little bit. But what is Tina? Like, we know Tina's an Auror, right?
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah, the Makuza cops, right?
I know that they are different governments, I sort of.
But they do say Auror in that movie, don't they?
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they say Auror, like it's a universally accepted term, and she like picks up Newt for having a suitcase in public, right?
Yeah, it was just like a general like regulation admonishment, right?
It wasn't even that. It was even more mundane. It was that he didn't register his wand before arriving in America. Like, he didn't file the right paperwork or whatever, or like his paperwork got lost in the mail. Like,
sorry, I don't like to Google stuff with my very loud keyboard while we're recording, but I am gonna look up real quick if Tina is explicitly an Auror. Yes.
Yeah,
yes, she is. Yes. She became an Auror for the Magical Congress of the United States of America.
It doesn't mean, none of this means anything.
So who is in charge of the execution? Sorry, I just scrolled on the page and saw the horrible execution room.
It's really wild thinking about the first Fantastic Beasts movie out, because like Crimes of Grindelwald has like occupied my mind for so long now, like whenever I think about Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
But honestly, whenever I remember how weird the first one is in its own right, I kind of do a double take, because there's the execution room, there's the speakeasy scene, there's the bizarre one scene with John Voight where he's just sitting down while the other actress like gives a monologue to him. There's some weird shit in that movie.
Yeah, that's a bizarre movie. Is Lita an Auror?
Is Lita an Auror, or is she just because she works for the French one, right? Are there French Aurors? Is she a L'Auror?
I don't know. I'm sorry to go down this road. It's just that I'm okay with this being a throwaway joke, but I have to say, like, Harry Potter is very centered around law and order and punishment.
Government.
Like,
yeah.
This is, and I don't understand what the like order of operations is here.
Right, like if that weird quiz, if the answer had been you see someone stealing a magic bicycle, who do you call? And the answer was like, that's the normal magical law enforcement thing. Like, that would make total sense. But the answer is always, you call the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You give You give Ruth Bader Ginsburg a ring. You get the Supreme Court
on the phone. I think that there are also some, frankly, some strange Supreme Court details in our next chapter, which we'll get to. So I'll shut up about magical law enforcement for at least a little while.
So with your rabbit hole about law enforcement, I want to go down the rabbit hole of email.
Okay.
Because when they're in the elevator after they run into Kingsley, we get the cute little scene with them noticing the memos, right?
Yes.
And the memos are like paper airplanes that fly around. And they fly to the person who needs the message. But the detail that Arthur gives is that, like, within his tenure at the ministry, I guess they switched to paper airplanes from owls because they were shitting everywhere. Which is a really funny joke, but like I cannot imagine the absolute chaos that would cause, right? Like, if we're thinking about this from like a mundane office story perspective, the idea that there's just like owls flying around shitting everywhere is really funny, especially because it's described as like having like ebony floors and like black wooden walls and stuff. This just seems like a disaster. But second of all, I don't get really what the joke, like, is, like, because you were asking me, like, do you think this is email? I thought that this might have been a stand-in for the, like, the pneumatic tube system joke that was in, like, every movie in the 80s and 90s. It's such a weird detail about, like, how the ministry operates.
I'll at least tell you how I got to it being an email joke. It's because when I originally read it, my first thought is, like, why were so many spell, like very basic spells, invented in such recent memory? Like, that is something that we have talked about so much here, right? Like, why this takes place in the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. Why was sword spell invented in the 90s? Why did Voldemort get to invent flying? Like, I don't get it. And so this weird detail where Arthur says, like, yeah, when I started working here, we just had owls shitting all over the place. But now we use these flying paper airplanes. I'm like, I'm sorry. How long has the ministry existed? And why did you just invent flying paper airplanes? So to me, that joke makes a lot more sense if Arthur was just telling like a funny like historical fact. Like, I think that would have been really cute if he was like, back in the Middle Ages they used owls and they shit all over the place. I guess I have no idea how old the ministry is. But no, it's like we just figured this one out. And so I was like, okay, this took place in the 90s. This has to be an email joke because it lines up with when offices like went digital. So that's how I arrived there, I guess.
It's just really weird to think of, like it's totally inconsequential. This is just me picking at stuff, but
we're just goofing.
we're goofing, but I like at the same time, this is a weird joke being told in the middle of a very serious part of the story, right? We are simultaneously supposed to be just accepting this as like a light joke about like, haha, they just invented poop not being everywhere. But also we are like in serious spy drama territory now also, right? Like,
yeah.
And they're really incongruous. Like, I can completely, like, if you're writing like a whimsical goofy satire and you're like, oh, the government's so stupid they only figured out how to not have poop in the halls a year ago, like, that's funny. you can do that in a less serious story, but like, this is also the one right where Harry is about to go and like be tried in a murder dungeon.
Yeah, this is the joke, like, haha, they can't get the poop off the floor. Let's have this story about serious government corruption now.
Yeah, it's just very out of, not even out of place. Like, there is definitely a place for this joke. It's just it is a goofy joke that is like putting a fork in the spokes of this like attempt to make the story more serious, I think.
Yeah, the place for this joke is in the a book you may have heard of, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Exactly.
I think that we'll be talking a lot about stuff like that that just doesn't make this leap very well.
Should we go to the, do we want to talk about the whole, like, trying to get Harry in absentia here in the next chapter?
Let's talk about it in the next chapter, because I think that's where he kind of puts it together, right? Like, he kind of realizes what's happened. The next chapter is called Chapter 8. It's not called Chapter 8, it's called The Hearing, but it is Chapter 8. And we get into the courtroom, and Harry realizes that it is in the horrible, scary dungeon that we know from the pensive memory from the last book. Fudge and Percy are both there presiding over this trial, and Harry estimates about 50 other witches and wizards are there. He notices specifically an older looking woman, who is Amelia Bones, and Fudge also takes that opportunity to introduce for the first time Dolores Umbridge, who is also noticed by Harry as looking like a frog lady. Fudge is kind of trying to move the trial along. A lot of this chapter is pretty dialogue heavy, but I'll try to get every kind of important detail. And it's at that point that Harry finds out that he's allowed one witness, and Fudge does announce that witness is Dumbledore, but it becomes obvious to Harry in that moment that because they changed the time and the place, Fudge was trying to, Fudge is at least surprised that Dumbledore is there. He kind of expects to announce that it's Dumbledore and have Dumbledore not show up, but it's at that moment that Dumbledore kind of walks through the door and is kind of breezily like, oh yeah, I heard that you changed it, and is very casual about it, and Fudge is clearly kind of dismayed. Harry is kind of briefly questioned, and Fudge is clearly angling the questions to present a narrative that Harry just cast a Patronus in an alley for fun, I guess. And Harry is not given a chance to kind of tell his side of the story. Amelia Bones, however, kind of cuts in and is impressed that Harry was able to produce the Patronus at such a young age, and does give him kind of some credit for that. It's at that point that Harry does kind of jump in and says, well, yeah, I cast a Patronus because there were Dementors. And Fudge tries to brush that off. That's crazy. They're in full control of the Dementors. Why would there be a Dementor in a Muggle alley? But there is some kind of murmuring from the crowd there. And Amelia Bones is also surprised. It sounds like she kind of heard a different story from maybe Fudge here. It's at this point that Fudge, tries to kind of keep going, but Dumbledore says that Harry's got a witness, and Mrs. Fig comes in and tells them that she saw Dementors, and that is apparently some pretty persuasive evidence. Fudge and Dumbledore have an argument back and forth, because Fudge accuses Dumbledore of accusing him of setting Dementors on someone, and Dumbledore says, no, I'm just saying that you're not in full control of them. Fudge says that's ridiculous. They kind of have a tense back and forth. It's reiterated that Dumbledore has been kicked off of the Wizengamot Supreme Court. Dumbledore is still just disagreeing with Fudge. It comes to a vote, and Harry is cleared of all charges. He will not be expelled, and he can still be a wizard. Harry tries to kind of look toward Dumbledore, but Dumbledore in this entire time has not looked at him, and Dumbledore turns and leaves without even making eye contact, and Harry is not too pleased about that, and that's the end of the chapter.
Okay. I would like to fully embrace our rewriting brains here.
Sure.
We fought for so long pretending that we didn't want to be that kind of, like, rewrite suggesting critic, but actually I am. I'm fully embracing it here.
Okay.
I don't hate this chapter, but I feel like it is devoid of all tension because we have already been to Grimmauld Place.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this whole hearing business would have been a lot more interesting if, like, Harry had done the Patronus, he had been, like, immediately picked up by orders or something, and, like, taken to the courtroom or whatever, and then Dumbledore would have swooped in and saved him, before going and, like, finding out about the order and stuff, because we know a bunch of this information that is, like, being told to us here, right? Like,
yeah,
like, we know that Dumbledore thinks that Fudge has gone power crazy, we know that Dumbledore thinks that the Dementors are outside of the Ministry's control now. Like, none of the stuff that, like, feels like it's being treated like a really important revelation in this chapter hits for me, because we've discussed it to death in the previous chapters when Harry got his whole, like, lore dump from the other members of the Order.
I really, when I read this, because I love a courtroom drama, and I couldn't quite put my finger on why I was so bored by it. And we did chat about it afterward. And when you said that, it all just clicked into place for me that this is the exact same thing as when we had the Crouch scene in Goblet of Fire, where Crouch is, like, crazy and in the woods. And I'm like, this should be so scary. This is so atmospheric. This is so interesting. Why am I so bored? And it's because we already got the lore dump. We already know.
Yeah, like, we already know that the Ministry and Dumbledore are at odds. We already know that, like, the Dementors are, like, a poker chip that is in play between both the Ministry and Voldemort. We know that someone has it out for Harry, right? We know that the Ministry is, like, sandbagging Harry Potter. It this is a really well-constructed scene for the most part. It's just that, like, there's no meat to it, because we got all of it in a previous chapter that was also, to be clear, I think that the previous chapters have been good. Like, I never, this, like, in a material sense, this is better than the Crouch thing, because it, at least when I got the lore dump beforehand, I didn't feel like it was a bad scene that was dumping lore on me, right? Like, I genuinely like the drama in that kitchen scene in Grimmauld Place, but this is, like, this then drops the ball, right? Like this is a completely superfluous scene, because we know all of the information that is revealed here, and it just is not scary, which is too bad, because, like, everything about it, like, you know, even the fact that, like, this is the courtroom from The Pensieve, which is, like, the worst part of the book so far, like, that's a cool detail. Like, Harry is right to be scared, and like Harry is having his, like, trust of Fudge in the government like, challenged, except that we know that Fudge sucks already, right? So, like, it's not a surprise, and it's
I can't help but feel how much, like, more impactful this would have been, because every other encounter that Harry has directly had with Fudge has been, like, kind of patting him on the head and a little bit just, like, more willing to brush stuff off for him. This would have been such a, I mean, I guess it still is, but it, like, a mirror to the scene where Fudge finds Harry after the night bus thing in Prisoner of Azkaban, and Harry thinks he's going to be expelled, and instead he gets a pat on the head and, like, oh, it's no big deal. And yet here he would have been, you know, being brought to court, and all of a sudden it's the same guy, and he, like, realizes that, like, it kind of cuts both ways, right? Like, they do whatever they want.
He realizes that, you know, Fudge was never truly concerned for him. Fudge was concerned about his image.
Right.
And, like that was why Fudge let him off the hook the third book, right? Like Fudge knew that if Harry Potter was killed by Sirius Black, there would be hell to pay, because it was the first time that Azkaban prisoner had ever escaped, and it was under his watch, right? Like, that's the only reason he cares in book three.
Yeah.
Likewise here, he now Harry is in the way, because he is saying that Voldemort is coming back under his watch, and he wants to silence Harry. Like, there is a good, we've been talking about, like, how the hell Fudge's character development works, right, and how confusing it is, but, like, the perfect route is right there in front of us.
Yeah.
just not used. It's very strange.
That would also, having that kind of flip ways here, also gives the opportunity for Harry to figure something out, right? To come to a conclusion on his own rather than to be just kind of, I mean, we basically as readers just got told what Fudge's character is, right? And this is, seems like such a perfect opportunity to let us come to that on our own instead of being told what to expect and then being given it. Like, oh yeah, that's what Sirius said is basically right, like my takeaway here.
Yeah, like there's a version of this scene where it's like, you know, Harry gets scooped up by Aurors and doesn't know what's going on. He's dragged into this scary courtroom and he's very scared. And then, like, you know, the lights come up and Fudge is there. And he's like, oh, phew, Fudge, he's on my side. And then slowly realizes that what's going on, right? Like, there's so many potential great ways to handle this story here.
Mm-hmm. This seems almost like the worst way to do it. I feel really, like, I did enjoy it. I mean, like, I'm kind of lukewarm about it, but it's really not necessarily bad. I feel like I'm really kind of going in, like, getting into it here. But the actual
Here's
scene,
a tangent.
Yeah.
What do you picture when you think of the Wazengamot, like, in this scene? Because I cannot, absolutely cannot.
Okay, hold on. Can I guess?
Yes.
Chrono Trigger Trial.
Yes, yes, yes. I was gonna say it's the Millennial Fair's courtroom scene, right?
You're guilty.
Exactly.
Yes, it really is. 100%.
That was all I can picture when I think of, this courtroom scene is playing Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, you ate that. You ate that courtroom. Old man's lunch. At
you
the
didn't
fair.
Help. Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely that. That's very funny. I love that game.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger rules. I have another, I think, like, my broadest nitpick, not even nitpick, this is like my broadest criticism with this, is the continued failure of Dumbledore to be a convincing badass spymaster character.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is just like one of those things. Mystery writing is hard because you can't, like a smart, an all-knowing character can't actually be any smarter than, like, the author of the piece, right? Like, it is all mysteries are beholden to how well the author can actually put together a mystery.
Yeah, this is kind of the biggest problem with BBC's Sherlock, but please continue.
Right, yeah. So Dumbledore is supposed to be coming into this scene and like completely owning Cornelius Fudge by his own logic.
This is an epic owned with logic scene for Dumbledore, would you say?
Yes, 100%. But it's this weird circular conversation in actuality where Dumbledore keeps on, like, accusing Fudge of one thing. Fudge gets mad and reiterates he didn't do it. And then Dumbledore going, like, well, someone did. And they go back and forth on that detail, like, three times. Like, Dumbledore's just, like, repeating the same dunk over and over again. And, like, I've already brought up Chrono Trigger, and I feel like I've already used up all of my reference points for the episode, but I'm sorry. Whenever the focus of the scene just became Fudge, like Dumbledore saying something that was an epic dunk on Fudge, and Fudge going like, "Duh!" Like, all I can think of is, like, this starts playing in my head, like... like, Dumbledore is just doing the, like, Death Note monologue to the camera of just like, actually, I figured out exactly how the Dementors got there. Someone had to have sent them to Privet Drive, but you wouldn't know anything about that, would you, Cornelius Fudge? Oh! Like, I just completely...
That's such a better version of this, though. Where is my Harry Potter anime? I'm sorry, this is a tangent because I have to eat my words from last episode where I said that there was no anime creature, and I was wrong about that.
Oh, that's right. We did discover that in that beautiful Deathly Hallows anime illustration by the Yaoi Doujin artists, there is a creature.
There is
in
a creature. I can't believe I overlooked it. But I am just now completely sold on what I am going to call your pitch for an anime Harry Potter courtroom drama. Because that sounds excellent.
It's so good. It was all I could think of in this weird back and forth, because it was just like Dumbledore would say something. Fudge would just like, it would say like, you know, Fudge snarled or whatever, and then
Critical
Dumbledore
hit.
Would continue, yeah, to own him with his logic. It is so weird. I just, yeah, Dumbledore just feels ineffectual here. The conversation goes in circles. I guess it all works out in the end, but I can't help but feel like this plan Dumbledore had to like big time Harry at his own courtroom appearance by like conjuring a chair and being a huge asshole
okay,
to everyone.
Here's the thing though. Dumbledore didn't do anything, because the only piece of evidence that was at all like influential to this trial is Mrs. Fig's testimony. Dumbledore yeah. didn't do anything. Like, his facts and logic had no effect on the outcome
Dumbledore honestly probably made things worse, right? By making Fudge really pissed. Like if he had just like went to Mrs. Fig's house and said like, okay, I need you to come with me. We're going to get you to the courtroom right now so you can be a surprise witness, and like introduced her and then fucked off, that would have made a lot more sense and felt a lot more like cunning mastermindy.
Yeah, but this is kind of a big gambit on his part to make Fudge really mad. Like, I assume that he knows everybody in the Supreme Court and like but like it seems a little bit risky considering there might be some people there that think it might be a good idea to suck up to the Minister of Magic. So that's quite a gamble from Spy Master Dumbledore here.
Yeah, it is. Oh, he's just not convincing Dumbledore is not L. That is my take. As much as I was hearing that music in my head when I read this, he is just like, none of his like deductions here were all that convincing. He just pissed off the one guy who needed to be like calm and rational and not put Harry away, right? Like he just sort of came in and made Harry's trial about himself as well, which is really
yeah
funny.
Because Dumbledore isn't L, he's the BBC's Sherlock.
Oh god. Yeah, it is very strange. I do like Mrs. Fig's testimony thing. Like that part's good.
Yeah, I liked the little tension. There was a like funny joke that I left out of my summary here, is that when she's describing the Dementors, she describes them as like running up or like walking, and somebody's like, they don't walk, they glide, and she's like, oh yeah, I meant glide.
Yeah, and there's the thing about her very lame description of them, like, oh, they wear cloaks, or like they're big and they have cloaks, which I thought was pretty funny.
I like her a lot. She's very
cute. But just this tension between like, oh no, did she really see them, or was it like a prepared statement that Dumbledore gave her that she's not doing very well, right? Like that part's cute.
Mm-hmm.
And. There's another joke, I think. I will say both of these chapters very funny. There's some good gags in here. What do you think of Umbridge's introduction here? Because we are meeting her for the first time here. We're getting like, this is the villain for the book. What do you think of this scene from that perspective?
I think it's a good way to introduce her before really introducing her, if that makes sense. I like that she's there, and it's as everybody knows that J.K. Rowling is the master of foreshadowing, which apparently just applies to anything that happens before something else happens. So that's I didn't think much of it, honestly.
Yeah, I her physical description was a lot more vivid than I remembered it being. I'm so caught up in the actress's portrayal of her, which is actually very good, I think.
Yeah,
like,
I think so too.
I think that was a perfect choice for her. Just like the description honestly makes me think more of like Slippy the Frog from Star Fox, right?
Slippy
like,
would never do this. This is a video Slippy game would... reference heavy episode.
This is a bonanza of video game references. I'm loving it though.
Yeah. We're gamers here.
We're gamer. Big gamer podcast.
Slippy
here.
Would never never do this.
But yeah, no, I think she's like effectively spooky in this part. I just, yeah, I don't think this is a bad scene. I like the tension in theory. It's just that like I have to go back and ring the Goblet of Fire bell again, and that like these chapters feel out of order to me.
Ding dong. It's the Goblet of Fire ding bell.
Ding dong, it's the Goblet of Fire bell. We fucked up.
We turned the Goblet of Fire upside down and turned it into a bell.
Ooh, that's a cool image. I like that.
Yeah. Can we talk about world building?
Yes, please. That's where I was going with this, is that the story's good. Again,
So Dumbledore was kicked off of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
This is the Supreme Court, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, this is
so
the
So are these
the
all just
gamut.
Like, is this like a part-time, like, is this like being like a member, it's like going to like bridge club after work, it's like gotta just go put in some time at the Supreme Court that I'm on.
Right, like it doesn't, it, like did he have to pass a bar or something? Like the... Is Dumbledore a keen legal mind?
Is this a courtroom? Are they all volunteers here? Are they getting paid? Is this like a part-time gig? Are some of them like full-time staff and like maybe a bunch more are just like part-time volunteers? What's going on here?
Cornelius Fudge standing on the court seems a little fucked up, I think.
Yeah, as the presiding fellow there.
Yeah, I'm sure that's like the implication, or like that's the intent, right? Is it like, hey, wait a minute, he's the guy, but it sure no one calls him out on that, really. Everyone just seems to be cool with that, and
even Amelia Bones, who is, as we know, very fair.
Yeah, Amelia Bones didn't seem all that fair to me, honestly. She kind of gave Harry the runaround for most of this courtroom scene, and then I guess was impressed that he could do a Patronus. I guess that's kind of fair on her part, but
yeah, you gotta hand it to him.
Does Amelia Bones show up more? Is this a character that we'll see more?
But I believe it's in 6 and 7, which I do not remember.
Does she have like a daughter at Hogwarts or something?
Yeah, I believe she's in Bones? Hufflepuff. I said Hufflepuff. That's the gym.
Hufflepuff.
That's what the gym is called.
And Pogwarts.
100%, there's a gym called Hufflepuff, right?
Oh, God. Okay, well, we're going to Google something again, because we're out of control this episode. Hufflepuff gym. Hufflepuff gym. Hufflepuff fitness.
Perfect.
It is a t-shirt that says, it has the crest that says Hufflepuff, and it has... It has like a buff badger furry flexing as the mascot.
That's perfect.
That's beautiful.
I love that.
Hufflepuff
shout out to,
gym.
Shout out to this mug. Etsy store or whatever.
Yeah. Hog weights, lifting door, slither gains, Hufflepuff, Raven Curl, School of Swolecraft, and Liftery.
Is that a bustle article? Is this like epic gym wear for every Potterhead?
It is a gym shirt on Gearbubble.
That's great. Well, beautiful. I have no idea what I was talking about. Hufflepuff.
World building. We were talking about
Hufflepuff.
World building.
I lost
Amelia
it.
Bones.
Amelia, yes. She has a daughter, Susan Bones, Hufflepuff.
That's right. Susan Bones. Okay, I knew that Bones was a name that like popped up a bunch in this. I just couldn't remember if it was Amelia who...
I think one of them dies, but I don't know which.
Oh, Susan, a named minor character in the Battle of Hogwarts, she's fucking toast.
Oh, bummer. Like, but did Mrs. Norris fight in the Battle of Hogwarts?
Well, we know she didn't die, so maybe not. You know, that's our proof once and for all for those Reddit questions. Yeah, I just between this and the insane quiz with hundreds and hundreds of questions about this stuff, I can't help but question J.K. Rowling's dedication to like I say this with like my pinky sticking up, with Worldcraft, right? Mm. And it's not, but like. we're always talking about this, about the difference between the early books and the later books, and I don't criticize it because I demand all stories fit together in a perfectly logical way. It's just that, like, J.K. Rowling keeps telling me that, like, that's what the story is supposed to be, right? And it's not. It has, like, holes the size of a barn door, like, every time.
This is also just a very central problem that the plot is trying to reckon with, I feel.
Yeah, this is one you want to nail, probably, right? Like, you want this one to be crystal clear to the audience so there's any tension at all. Which, granted, like we talked about, I guess there really isn't that much tension in this scene because we already know what the like loyalties are of all the characters involved. It's just a mess. Like we said about a lot of Goblet of Fire chapters, it is a good chapter in a vacuum, I suppose. It's a good scene, but it is not super duper compelling, like, within, like, the grand story of Order of the Phoenix so far.
Yeah, I again, like, rewriting, you could even, I feel like having any sense of urgency going into this courtroom scene, all of the little details that you get with Sirius saying, like, oh, Amelia's fair, like, this is such a, like, good, like, gauntlet scene where all these characters are trying to tell Harry all this information, but he's, like, being pushed into this courtroom scene. Like, there's so many ways to go about this, and so I can't help but question if this was the good way to do it. I feel like I'm being really hard on these chapters, which makes it sound like I really didn't like them, but I enjoyed reading them for what it's worth.
Yeah. The writing is so much stronger in this book than it was in Goblet.
Yes.
Like, definitely. Like, just, like, the moment-to-moment descriptions and, like, the flow of the dialogue is so much better. Like, this chapter, maybe more than any of them, has ran the risk of, like, just being a serious cave scene style, like, dialogue dump, and they do a good job of keeping it light, and, like, bouncing between multiple characters and stuff. Like, it is fun to read. It's a good scene. It's just, like, the aesthetics have improved, the content has not, right? Like,
yeah, I would say the content has improved slightly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be a bit more generous to it. Yeah, it is a good scene. It is so funny to me that, like, this is supposed to be Dumbledore's big badass, like big timing of fudge, right? Like, he just sort of, like, got in there and, like, pissed him off and left.
That's some powerful strategy.
A really good strategy.
This is it's game theory, actually.
Oh no. All right, Hogwarts. It's time for some game theory. Yikes. Okay. Is there anything else you want to cover in this chapter, or shall we take a break and come back?
I think we could take a break here. Welcome back. It is the middle to end of March, and you know what that means.
St. Patrick's Day was last weekend.
Sure. You might also guess, I think it was the first basketball day of spring yesterday.
Basketball something.
But as we all know, more importantly than all of that, sometime roughly in the middle of March, it becomes Magical Mischief Month.
It sure does. Why they didn't just wait for April, I will never understand, but hey.
Now here's the real question. So I first saw something about Magical Mischief Month probably, like, last week, which would have been about the middle of March. So is it, like, a calendar month? Like, are we just getting to the end of March and, like, that's all we get? Or is it, like, middle of March to middle of April? like a full just like 30-ish days.
Oh, and maybe that's the mischief of it, is it's in a confusing date.
The inherent mischievous of not respecting the Gregorian calendar.
yeah. I like the way you think there. I'm so in love with it because like Pottermore rolled out like a banner and like a new icon and like a bunch of tweets for it, and I just still don't quite get what it means or what it is.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am with it too. So before we get to the mischief, you know, it's like mischief is like dessert. But we have to eat our vegetables first. Which means I would like to, you know, when we were talking about the chapters this week, we said, you know, we should really revisit that crazy test, the wombat. And this is kind of spur of the moment. I pulled it up on our break there. And I really believed in myself. I thought that I would be able to figure out the answers to this test. And there's just no way. Like, I don't know how to explain in this audio format how impossible it is to figure out what the answers to the test are.
Like it's not like a simple A, B, C, D, one is correct thing. It's like there's certain point values for how correct each answer is, right?
Right. And also the questions are broken up. So every question is like, okay, this is part one of five, question 3 out of 17. And I cannot, like, I am looking at the answer key and I cannot, like, it would take me probably like a math homework amount of time to actually figure out which of the answers is right.
Right.
I feel like maybe the first time we did this, I read this post out loud, which is the person that reverse engineered and figured out what the answers are. But in case maybe you're just joining us for the first time, haven't heard that episode, I would like to read this little blurb, which was created. The answer key was created by someone that goes by RuneWit online. And I just want to read the blurb just to kind of demonstrate how crazy this is. They reverse engineered the quizzes back when they were up. This is what they had to say about their methods. I worked them out when the door page got a time turner and you could get an instant grade after doing the wombat. The method was to answer only a few questions, perhaps just one, and find sets of answers where you could get a different grade by changing the answer to just one question. That allows you to rank answers, and with a few assumptions, such as that the questions in the same section or subsection score the same, you can deduce the probable scoring by doing each wombat a lot of times. My scoring is probably correct, but there might be mistakes and I might have made incorrect assumptions or deductions, so I can't say for definite that they are right. So I hope that somehow demonstrates this problem here. It's crazy.
I admire their dedication, but like, holy shit.
Yeah, and I decided we'll do like a couple questions here because they're kind of the ones that are, I would say, most relevant to our interests right now. And the answers are just not the heart of the questions here. Also consider that this is the format is that the answers, like, each answer gives you some amount of points.
Right.
So they're all right in a way. So I'll read a couple of questions here and we can chat about those before we move on to some mischief. I have Wombat, grade 1, part 2, question 2 out of 17, which is, which of the following should be most severely punished by the Wizengamot? So we're doling out punishments here.
All right.
Not the fun kind.
Okay.
A. The injury of 3 muggles due to a poorly performed forgetfulness charm. B. The death of a chicken due to a poorly aimed bat bogey hex. Oh no, I've already read this one. We're going to revisit this one because it makes me laugh every time.
It's good.
C. The use of the Cruciatus curse on a shark about to attack a muggle. And D. The use of the Imperius curse on a muggle mugger.
Yeah, we did do this one before, and I have to reiterate, I think that using the Imperious Curse on a person is probably worse than hurting a shark.
Taking away their free will.
Yeah, but if I remember, I seem to remember that the shark was the most heavily weighted thing on this test.
Yeah, I believe so. I think the torture curse kind of came out on top, whereas I feel like the two that affect humans should probably be
look
more severely punished.
I am in no way advocating animal cruelty, but I think if we're talking about the grand scheme of morals here, if you are stopping a crime from happening, there are better ways to do it than like mind bend someone with a dark curse, right? That seems a little.
Yeah, I would say so. I am kind of glad that we were able to revisit that one, only because I think this next one I didn't read, but it is like the flip side of it, which is which of the following should receive the lightest punishment from the Supreme Court. And it is A, horns created accidentally on culprit's mother caused by a broken wand. B, a jelly legs jinx. There's also a typo here. Performed on threatening muggle. Or C, breeding fanged puff skeins. Or D, underage witch performs cleaning charms in privacy of own home. So which of these would you punish the least?
The one that's an accident, I would assume. That would be my like if I have the information that one of these is explicitly an accident. Honestly, I don't really think any of these, except maybe giving a muggle jelly legs, really seem all that punishable. Clean your damn room with magic. That sounds good. That's what it's for.
I'm pretty sure, again, take my reading of the answer key with a grain of salt, but I'm pretty sure that the one performed on the muggle, you don't get the, that one should be punished according to the answers, but I could be completely wrong.
Yeah, you shouldn't do magic on unsuspecting people. I agree with that, I guess.
I'm going to read one more since one was a repeat.
All right.
This is question 4 out of 17. Which of the following does not require a Ministry of Magic license? A. Krep ownership. B. Sale of magical artifacts. C. House elf ownership. Or D. Apparition.
We know that apparition takes a license test, right? Because
yep, I think that's all we know. I think that's the only one with any text information. That's the other really fun part of this quiz, is that you would think if you were writing a quiz like this for the general population to take, it would all be like information that's in
it's possible to
the book, but it's not.
Yeah, possible to glean from anything in the books. Yeah,
or you might include the answers so that people could learn them.
Can learn
but
the
neither
information.
Of those are true yeah. about this quiz.
A Krupp is the dog with two tails, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm gonna say that probably doesn't require a license.
Do you think that it is required to have a license to have a house elf? What is that? A slave owning license? Does the ministry give those out?
That's knowing how fucked up the Harry Potter world is, I'm going to say that because we know that Newt Scamander worked in the office for house elf relocation, didn't he?
Oh God, we do know that, don't we?
There's a house elf related office in the damn ministry, so it sure seems like that's something that goes through the government, huh?
I guess so.
That's a little fucked.
That is a little fucked, isn't it?
But I want to say that that's probably the case, is that the ministry probably keeps track of all of the house elf ownership out there.
I said that was the last one, but I can't.
These are good. I love these.
I have to read the next one, and that'll be really it, and we can move on to some mischief, only because this list is incredible. Which of the following wizarding laws, in your view, stands in most urgent need of change? Which is such a weird question. Ooh. to score.
Yeah, how
this
do you,
is great. This what is great your for op- us.
I'm going to grade you on your opinion.
Here, let's find out our opinion here.
Yeah.
A, the detection of underage magic in all magic households, and by the and all magic is hyphenated, so it's like a wizard only household.
Right.
And in parentheses it says currently impossible.
Okay.
B, the ban of goblin possession of wands, parentheses, ought to be lifted.
Okay.
C, the reclassification of centaurs and merpeople, parentheses, ought to take their views into account.
Okay, I see where D, this is going.
D, the guidelines on house elf welfare, parentheses, need to be enforced.
Oh my god.
E, definitions of muggle baiting, parentheses, need to be made less stringent.
Oh wait,
that's
less...
a lot.
Okay, if what I am, okay, I'm going to interpret the muggle baiting thing as we need to have a looser definition so muggles get abused less, which I would agree with. I think
I don't know which way.
What do they mean by stringent there? But I like that the first one is can we figure out when kids are doing magic, and the others are, do you acknowledge the personhood of all of these other creatures?
I think I might have worked out the scoring for this one.
Oh, good.
I think I might have figured it out.
How do you score this one?
I only know because this is the only one in part one that has this many answers.
Okay.
So that's my guess, and it is the last question. So I'll tell you what it thinks.
Okay.
You get the most points for option D, which is the guidelines on how self-welfare need to be enforced. You get 2 points for the ban of goblin possession of wands ought to be lifted. You get 1 point for the reclassification of centaurs and merpeople ought to take their views into account. And you get 0 points for the detection of underage magic in all magic households, currently impossible, and definitions of muggle baiting need to be made less stringent. So does that help?
Okay. So, I mean, on the one hand, I'm sort of glad that, like, taking the views of merpeople and centaurs into account is probably a good stance to have. I don't know why the like rights of goblins, centaurs, and merpeople are weighted differently. And then also the welfare of muggles, I assume, is what the question is getting at, is a zero. Like fuck them.
What a weirdly worded question.
I love to be ranked on whether or not my opinions are correct. That's great.
Discriminated for being conservative once again in Harry Potter world.
Oh my god. That is so bizarre. I forgot that goblins weren't allowed to have wands. That's so fucked up.
At least the canon, and by the canon, I mean this quiz thinks that that's fucked up, but only like a 2.
Yeah, like not full. That's just like a little fucked up.
It's a little fucked up.
That they don't have full agency in this world that they like run the economy of, which also, let's talk about how that's a little fucked up. This whole, it's turtle. Hello, we're back. There was a popping noise and then the recording stopped. And I'm not sure what the deal was there. So we're back. I hope that no one apparated out of my house.
Or Dobby apparated into your house.
I do hope that Dobby apparated into my house. Maybe he heard us talking about how pro house elf welfare we were, and he was coming to say, me too. I agree.
That does sound like Dobby.
I love having rights. I love being treated as an individual.
Well, now that we've learned a little bit about the law, in Harry Potter. How about we have some fun and some mischief?
Let's do some. It's mischief month, and I'm craving it. I'm craving that mischief.
So I searched pranks on the Harry Potter subreddit.
Oh no. Oh, this is gonna be bad.
Not really. It's mostly Fred and George posts, but I do love to hear what people think of pranks. So I'll start us off with a post, which is a question. And it's, does anyone think Fred and George were actually funny? I feel like we've talked about this a lot on this podcast.
Yeah. I do think they can be pretty funny, but they also, they cross the line sometimes, for sure.
Well, I think this Reddit poster, who I am pleased to announce is Why Kick a Moo Cow, agrees yes. with you.
Yes! Lore! I love lore!
We love the lore. And Why Kick a Moo Cow says, this is something I wonder sometimes, as they are portrayed as the funny ones in Harry Potter. Hell, Ron introduces them to Harry as the ones that make people laugh. But maybe it is just me, but I have never found Fred and George to be remotely funny. They can be quite cruel a lot of the time, but even when they are not, and they are trying to joke around, I tend to find their brand of humor to be really, really obvious, and not anything that ever actually made me laugh. I also think they're clever, and I quite liked some of their inventions, but I was more talking about their wit and their ability to tell jokes. Does anyone else think that the twins' sense of humor is vastly overrated?
Oh, no. Oh, the comedy nerd is here.
The comedy nerd is here. I take a little bit of objection to the only avenue of being funny is to tell jokes. It's like, it's like the I'm a comedian. Oh, well, then tell me a joke.
Oh no, what I would love to know what Why Kick a Moo Cow's taste in comedy is. He's like, I think that Fred and George could have done with watching some Bill Hicks specials.
Ooh.
Or something, right? Like what on earth is he comparing them to? I think if we're talking specifically about their wit, I do think that Fred and George are very funny. Like, you know, if we're not talking about their pranks and we're just talking about like their dialogue, I think it's funny. I think that whole scene with Fred asking Angelina out in Goblet of Fire is a highlight in that book.
I think that most of the replies agree with you. There are a lot of, they were my favorite characters by far. I thought they were a riot. They were hilarious. People kind of recounting their favorite Fred and George jokes.
That's good. Yeah, so. I like them. They're, you know, like I said, some of their pranks, I don't agree with them bullying people, but if we're just talking about their jokes, I'm pro Fred and George. I think they're pretty funny.
Are you ready for some theology?
I am always ready for some theology. That's my favorite.
Okay, this is very short and sweet, but I think it's very thought-provoking. What if Jesus was just a wizard playing a prank on muggles? I've got some real zingers in the replies.
Ooh,
here.
Please, land
so,
on me.
So I'll give you some zingers. Jesus Christ and Harry Potter, two of my most favorite fictional characters.
Damn! Ooh, got him.
Pretty sure he isn't. He would not want to be crucified naked. I just want you to know that not and naked are both capitalized there.
Oh no. Oh yeah, that really like, when I'm just thinking, like, there is precedent for, like, the so-and-so was actually a wizard pranking, because, like, that's the whole thing with, like, the witch trials in the first book, right, is, like, the implication is that, like, oh, actually, they really liked it, they thought that the fire felt funny, and they liked being burned. I don't know if that one really extends to crucifixion, you know? Like, I love having nails driven into my hands and feet that rocks. I love being pierced with the Lance of Longinus. Yeah, that rocks to me.
that is quite the fun prank that you might pull during Magical Mischief Month, which is very honestly evidence to this point here, because Easter is coming up.
Easter is coming up.
Magical Mischief Month.
Fuck. Why didn't they just do it in April?
Maybe Magical Mischief Month is the last half of March and also all of April.
It's a big bumper sized month. It's a 6 week month. It's a really long one. Oh my God. Why isn't it just the month that has April Fools and Easter in it? You get candy.
Yeah.
Just eggs.
I have another one for you.
Please. I love these.
This one is just titled, Tell Us Your Prank Stories. And I only included it because I can't really tell if this person made this post and is role-playing as George in the post. And I just I just want you to help me like workshop this because I don't fully understand it. It's called Tell Us Your Prank Stories. As you all know, today it is Fred and my birthday. As such, we would like to give you the opportunity to share with us times when you've pranked someone or been pranked yourself. We could do with some entertainment and maybe some fresh ideas, and what better time than now? Don't forget, stay tuned for more products from your favorite twins all throughout the day. But they're not like using like a novelty account. This isn't like
this isn't an RP account.
The username is just like a normal whatever Reddit name, but it's not like George Weasley.
Oh no.
And then everyone in the replies is also role playing. So I don't fully understand what's going on here, because the first comment is one time I pushed a suit of armor on Professor Snape. He broke 3 ribs and had a concussion. It was the best day ever.
That's horrible. Don't be mean to Mr. Snape. Oh no. That's terrible. Are there any real pranks in here that have happened?
Oh no.
Uh-oh.
I honestly did not see this and I wasn't ready, but yes, there is one real prank. And get ready for this epic own, because this, they say, they actually do kick you out of Barnes & Noble if you put up a fiction sign over the Bibles, particularly when it's handmade. Totally worth it.
Oh God. What Reddit is a fucking hellhole. Holy shit. That's beautiful. I'm so glad everyone got to share their pranks. Are there any other good roleplay pranks? Who was the best role player in this thread?
Let me see here. That's the best. The best role player is the top of the comments here, which is the one time I pushed a suit of armor on Professor Snape. But that's only because everyone else just like responded with like role play, like joke, like links to like GIFs that are
good.
So that's pretty much the highlight here. There is somebody that is typing entirely in like hello. Typing.
Oh good. Ooh.
And I can't, it's so dedicated that I can't read it.
Oh please, you have to try. You can't tease me with that. You need to do the hello voice.
As a kid, I was a terrible prankster. I once tried to fool my dad by adding bits of cardboard to his, I don't know what word this is, career. I am at a loss. And then it just says he noticed white away by looking at it.
What the fuck? Is this a, what is,
I don't understand the bit.
Wait, you need to click into that account and see if there's more. Are there all their posts like that? Or is it just this one?
It's just that one. All of their other posts are just like normal Reddit posts.
What?
On like Ask Reddit and stuff.
I was a terrible prank. Are there any other details in there that like might suggest which character they're role, like a, like
No. What? They're like Flair on the subreddit is just Professor of Occlumency.
What the? I am truly stunned by this. What the fuck?
Also, somebody else responded with, let me guess, Tung Toffee, which I feel like is a little bit of a leap. Like, can you guess that?
Is that what they're trying? Okay, here's the thing. I could see this going both ways. Maybe that is what they are trying to do because it's Weasley roleplay or whatever. And they just don't know the connotations that the hello voice has. or I don't know. I'm spiraling here. What could this possibly mean? What are they trying to say?
I don't know. If anyone knows what it means, that would be great if you could let us know.
What's the word that you couldn't?
I will spell it.
Yeah, spell it out.
CEWEAW. Car? I can't figure it out because they can't be ours. That's not a word.
Sorry, spell it for me one more time.
CEWEAW. I'll link it to you in
what
there.
The fuck? Care.
And they added bits of cardboard to it.
They added.
I don't know. I'm fluent in Hawo language. Yeah, and I have no idea what this is.
Career is my best guess too, but you can't. You don't put cardboard on a career.
Yeah, I have no idea. I feel like there might be someone out there listening to this that just like knows what it is. Like they are even more like a Hawo scholar and are just like, this is so obvious and are just like screaming, like, why can't they figure it out?
What the fuck is this? Sewi? Okay, I'm just gonna search cereal. I put cardboard in his cereal.
What? He noticed what? What is this bit? I don't understand.
Is that the whole post? I put cardboard in his cereal?
What beautiful. Good post. Thank you. Thank you very much.
His cereal.
I feel completely derailed by this.
Me too. I want to know what the fuck this means. Why is it in baby talk?
All their other posts are normal. Like, honestly, the most normal Reddit in that I don't have to scroll very long for a post about the age of consent.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. Oh, that's such a bad combination.
Anyway, I'm going to move on to this one, which is called Fred and George Dark Side Theory.
Oh, hell yes. Yes.
We know that Fred and George had the Marauder's map in their possession while Pettigrew was a rat, sleeping with Ron every night in Hogwarts. Is it not possible that perhaps Pettigrew put the boys under some spell to prohibit their logic in seeing a man sleeping with their brother? Or maybe Fred and George secretly struck a deal with Pettigrew because they wanted to play a prank on Ron. We know they are the jokesters of the family. They turned to the dark side without even knowing it, perhaps.
Oh, this will be such a good prank. We'll make a deal with this 35-year-old criminal and let him sleep with our bro. What could possibly...
This is their YouTube channel. This is the 35-year-old criminal sleep with brother as rat prank video. That's the classic challenge.
That's the new
challenge. All the
kids
are doing this challenge.
Holy shit. Oh, I was... Okay, that was an excellent post. I had such a different vision in my mind for what Dark Side Fred and George was going to be. Just imagining Fred and George as dark wizards is a really great, great thought exercise, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that there's probably room for the one that lives to go to the dark side, right?
Yeah. Ooh, there you go.
I don't know which one lives. I never remember.
Hear me out here. Okay. He falls into a vat of chemicals and his skin turns all white and he hurts his face and he gets kind of like a permanent smile etched on his face and his hair's all green from the chemicals and he wanders the streets of Diagon Alley asking people if they want to hear a joke.
That's so intriguing. I love that.
That's a little twisted, don't you think?
That's insanely twisted.
Yeah.
The people on the subreddit do not like this theory.
No one likes this one?
Nobody likes it. They're really... No, this isn't a theory. It's fan fiction.
Ooh, I hate fan fiction.
Also, the user's name is always Snape.
Always... Wait, always, this is some more lore. We've definitely read some always Snape posts before. They're, what are they known for? Okay, I'm going to have to do some research. We'll revisit this in a future episode, but we've definitely encountered always Snape before. They are a Waikikamukau tier character. I think they might be one of the people who argue with Waikikamukau all the time about heights.
I love the subreddit lore.
I love this. One day we'll make a wiki page of just like what all the what all the stuff is.
I have another good post for you, but only because it has like strong Wattpad energy to me.
Ooh, that's my favorite kind right now.
It's called Harry Potter Prank. So, my idea is we train a bunch of owls to send mail to people. We then write fake Hogwarts acceptance letters to 11-year-olds on their birthday and send them by owls. We tell them to go to this pub, and we hire an actor to pretend to be their provider, helping guy who will tell them all this bullshit.
Oh, no!
And where to buy their stationery, ... That's the end of the post.
Okay, I am enamored with the way this post opens with, okay, we start by training some owls to deliver mail, as if this is like the easiest, like, okay, this is step one. This is honestly the simplest part. We just got to train some birds. Oh my God. This is beautiful.
Yeah, because like I find that the story of carrier pigeons and like homing pigeons to be really interesting just because it was like these weird birds that did that for some reason and were really easily trainable and they went extinct. Like they're just gone now. But no, we're just gonna train a bunch of owls. It's not gonna be any big deal. What we're really gonna need to do is to drum up some money to hire this actor. to tell them to where to buy their stationery. And then that's the end of the post.
Oh my God, that is so good. This is up there now. This is maybe my new favorite post on this subreddit. I'm just floored by step one. We train a bunch of owls to deliver mail. That would be like a Nobel Peace Prize tier like scientific achievement is like rediscovering whatever it was that was able to train people to have birds deliver mail, right? Like that doesn't exist anymore. The last ones died out in World War I. Oh my God.
All for this epic prank too.
All in the service of like ruining an 11-year-old's birthday.
Can I read the two responses to this post?
Mm-hmm.
The top comment, with 5 karma points, for whatever that's worth, I have no idea. Cruel, but as a Slytherin, I like the idea of seeing disappointed look on the 11-year-olds.
Oof. That's horrible.
And 2, with 3 points, aces, man. Get it going.
Yes, that's me. Someone comes up to me and says, hey, we're gonna train some owls to deliver mail. Aces, man, let's do it.
get it going.
Holy shit, that is so good. That is a Hall of Famer post. That is fucking incredible.
Yeah, I'll have to save that one. That one is truly very quality. I have to recover from this one. I've got one more for us.
Okay. All right. One last piece of mischief.
I can't top that one. But we'll have kind of a more serious discussion with this post, which is how did Dumbledore handle Sirius prank? I really like Sirius Black, but I think it was terrible what he did to both Snape and Lupin by revealing Lupin's secret to Snape. Snape could have been killed or turned into a werewolf, and Lupin's life would have been shattered even more than it was. As far as Hogwarts disciplinary matters, this seems one of the worst ones. Worse than children out of bed at night and worse than students dueling each other. Dumbledore was made aware of it, and I doubt he took it lightly. How do you suppose he handled it, and what if any punishment took place, aside from Snape being sworn to secrecy?
You know, this touches on a point that I do think about sometimes about the whole Marauder story, which is that, like, we never, I assume that the answer is they just resolved it, like, off screen. It's not a big deal anymore. But the idea of Sirius's epic prank being, hey, Lupin, I'm going to make you a murderer, is one that I think might have caused some more bad blood between Lupin and Sirius.
Yeah, Lupin's pretty chill about it.
Lupin doesn't really ever bring it up at all, I don't think. And granted, he also thought that Sirius was a mass murderer for a long time, and then it turned out that he wasn't. So maybe that's sort of like, yeah, I don't know, that's kind of water under the bridge at that point. But that's, hey, dude, I'm going to do the epic make my friend kill someone prank. Like, like that, I don't know. I would probably pull Sirius aside and have a chat with him about that one. I think.
At this point, it feels very true to these modern day pranks, though. So I will give him credit for that. I feel like I have been pleasantly surprised thus far with how unstable Sirius has been in a way that I did not expect.
Yeah, that's definitely something I never picked up on when I first read these books, but just how, like, Sirius does seem like a little out there, right? Like I think my favorite detail still is him fiddling with, like, the mashed potatoes or whatever, like a child when he was mad at dinner. Like that's a good little detail. These books do a good job with him, I think.
Yeah, I think that we have previously kind of made the goof making Fred and George the, like, YouTube prankster characters, and I still definitely stand by that. But Sirius is certainly, like, the YouTube prankster that has to apologize every month.
Well, I think it's different. I think that that Fred and George are, like, the vloggers. They're like the Pauls, right? And, like, they do pranks and stuff, but it's like they just kind of have this, like, nightmare channel where that's always happening. I think the Marauders are more like those channels that just do the really stupid shit, like I'm grabbing people from behind in public prank gone wrong, gone sexual challenge, right? Like they seem like the way more, like, hardcore fucked up shitty pranks things, like calling muggles mudbloods until they punch us or something, right? Like it just seems a little more mean-spirited, where it's like the Pauls, or like the Fred and George, they're the Paul brothers. I think they're just dumb, right? Like, they're maybe still a little malicious, but more just like dumb frat boys.
Yeah, I can see that. That's fair enough.
And that tracks too, because I would say there's about, if we're going by the book ages of the characters, I think that the time period the Marauders would have existed is when those earlier prank videos were more popular versus where we are now with, like, celebrity vlog prank stuff, right? So they're really just carrying the torch forward.
Sirius, after escaping from Azkaban, his new, like, YouTube prankster energy is like an adult man that does one of those videos for children where it's like it's a hoax, but he's like, I put myself in a Tupperware container and put myself out to sea.
Sirius is Blippi.
Yes.
Sirius runs the children's YouTube channel. That's actually he actually got way more fucked up stuff in his YouTube history.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad we've solved this puzzle here.
Everyone in Harry Potter is a YouTuber. Maybe not YouTuber. Everyone in Harry Potter is online. That much is clear. They all map to online archetypes.
Yes. A tale as old as time.
And we will just have to slowly kind of piece together every single one. So we have some YouTubers, but I'm sure there's some more things out there. Dumbledore is a Linux guy. That's what I'm going to go ahead and say here.
I appreciate that.
I think Dumbledore is a Linux guy. He is the genie. He is the unheralded genius who actually kind of seems a little weird and maybe made everything worse for everyone.
Most likely, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Wow, that was a whole heaping helping of mischief. I loved that.
Yeah, I'm really there. The post about the training the owls prank, I read it and it was nothing like reading it out loud was such a different kind of transformative experience for me.
I thought that was beautiful. I loved it. That is a Hall of Famer for sure. I'm fucking losing it over. We just step one, just train some birds as you do. Really sure. Easy stuff. We all know that training animals takes, I don't know, 10 minutes tops.
Yeah, very easy.
How would you train? Like you just go to an owl. Last year I was very lucky and got to visit a like bird of prey sanctuary thing and got to hold an owl and stuff and watch someone feed it. It was really cool. It was when I was in England. I will say I would not. I love owls. I love birds. Without a lot of protective gloves and maybe a lot of training, I would not want to piss one off by waving a letter in its face.
Just train some owls.
Just train some owls. Just go ahead.
Did you get an energy from the nice folks working at the Birds of Prey Sanctuary that they maybe received a lot of comments about Harry Potter every time an owl was shown?
Mm-hmm. There was a they did have a snowy owl there, and the when you went up to it and read the description of it, it does say like this is the kind of owl that Harry Potter had. So I'm sure that they were getting that question a lot. I did not torture them with that question. I was mostly enamored by the fact that I was able to hold an owl on my arm and have it not tear me to shreds.
Well, I encourage you next time, if you ever get the privilege to hold an owl and have like a person that works with the birds, I would maybe ask some probing questions about how you might go about training them to deliver some letters for
you. I would love to go to a fucking animal sanctuary and just be like, look, okay, I need a breakdown of the capacity for each and every one of these animals to learn to deliver mail. Which is the most efficient? Which is the one that you think learns the fastest? Which of these can I use in my prank to ruin an 11-year-old's birthday?
Perfect. Perfect.
Oh my god. Well, I think it's probably time for us to bring this to a close. What do you say?
I would say so.
All right. Our theme song is Hot McGonagall by Cheshire Moon. You can check them out on Bandcamp. Thanks to them, as always, for letting us use that as our theme song. You can check us out on patreon.com/shriekcast. We have so many good bonus episodes for you there. We're doing them weekly. They're so much fun. If you would like to find out what would happen if we were trapped in a mansion with Benedict Cumberbatch, I highly recommend you check us out on there.
That sounds terrible.
The story itself doesn't really do itself many favors, so you know. I would just like to place a real quick bounty out there. If anyone listening in their younger days was a nerd fighter and paid for the tier of charity donation in some nerd fighter thing that got you the fan fiction about someone giving birth at Hogwarts. Can you please send us that?
We have to read it. We have to read it.
It's not up anywhere online and you can't buy it anymore. I was fully prepared to fork over some money so we could cover this, but it is lost to time as of now. And this is, you know what? This is about preservation. This is not just about making fun of the Green Brothers. This is about preservation of literature that is lost to time. So if you know where we can find that, please let us know. Speaking of reading, Liz, what are we reading next week?
These chapters are sure getting a little bit longer, and yet not quite long enough.
Not long enough to go to one yet, I don't think.
I would say like it's close, but the real bummer is that maybe not. The first chapter is a little bit longer, but our second one is a little shorter. I'd say, I hope I didn't say this last week, but let's do two more and kind of gauge where we are with that, because I think this is probably about as long as two chapters can be.
Okay.
But it's very on kind of the edge. I'm looking ahead to the week after, and I feel like we might start going down to one then. But for next week, let's do chapter 9, The Woes of Mrs. Weasley, and chapter 10 called Luna Lovegood.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good, because that means that the week after we will be at Hogwarts, because the Luna Lovegood is the train, right?
Yep.
Okay, that sounds great. I think that's perfect.
Perfect.
All right, well, you know, you might have, if you're out there, if you are that special someone who has that Hank Green Womb of Requirement fan fiction, I know that you are probably very excited to read it along with us and read Order of the Phoenix along with us too. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for considering sending us this beautiful fan fiction that we have to read. However, even though you are definitely a Harry Potter scholar of the highest order, even though your brain has built up the same kind of armor that ours has against this kind of bullshit now, I would still suggest, you know, please read another book.
Please read another book. But there's a lady there, makes ocean roar seem tame. Better know what you're after if you catch her eye. Cause this hot mama is just a cat in disguise.